I like to make an extra tape for my grandchildren. Today is January 1st, 1981. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my background. Laura, I was born in 1914 in Germany, and my maiden name was Tilly Victoria Rehbock. The Victoria comes from the fact that it was the beginning of World War I, and when I was born, September 5th, the Germans thought they had won a victory over the French. And my proud parents named me Victoria. But after they named me Victoria, we found out that the Germans had lost, but anyway, I was stuck with the name. I was an only child. My father's name was Hugo, H-U-G-O. My mother's name was Frida, F-R-I-D-A. And they were very loving parents who protected me and didn't spoil me too badly, but gave me a very happy childhood. Also had an excellent education. I was 6 years of integration to a convent. Had 9 years of Latin and 9 years of English and 5 years of French, and was for a long time the only Jewish person among about 200 Catholics, all of whom were very sweet and very nice to me. I graduated in 34 and wanted to go to college, but by then was the Third Reich and they didn't allow any Jewish people anymore to universities, and so I did nothing and learned a little bit to cook and took some lessons in Italian and in English and read some English books and always loved books and still do. And then after I dated quite a lot of nice young men, I met Max Wiesenfelder and fell very much in love with him. And we got married in August 1936. And went on a honeymoon to Trieste and Yugoslavia. My father was part owner of a sewing silk factory, and when I got married, he had suffered a heart attack about a year before, and also couldn't do much travel to foreign countries anymore. And let Max take over for him and travel to Scandinavia and all over Europe and slowly take over his place. And Max became a partner in the firm in 37. And we had hoped to stay in Germany, but things got from bad to worse, and in 38 was clear that no Jew could stay. So we gotten every day for this country, but there was a waiting of a year and a half or two, and so we took up some Swedish connections, and they got us the visa to come to Sweden, which we did in 39 in February, and there was a transit visa, which meant we were not allowed to work, and we were not allowed to take money out of Germany. All we had was our furniture and our clothes, for which we had paid 100% of the original price in order to be allowed to take it out of the country. And no jewelry, and besides one wedding ring, and just one set of silverware per person. And we had smuggled out of Germany some jewelry, which I now have and we will eventually inherit. And we also smuggled out a little money, though we were not desperate in Sweden. We got an apartment, I finished it too, and we settled in the Swedish lady teacher Angel learned some Swedish and meant to stay in Stockholm or in a suburb of Stockholm. The living was very good and the apartments modern and beautiful. When Germany was at war with England, and Norway and Denmark were occupied, and Finland was at war, so we decided we didn't want to wait until Sweden might also be occupied, and renewed our visa for the United States, and got the visa from the consul in Stockholm to come here and booked a passage from Stockholm to New York. And one day Max came home and said, I bought a little leather pouch to hang around my neck. And I said, what for? And he said, well, you can put your jewelry in, and if our ship is torpedoed, you at least save the jewelry. And I said, if my ship is torpedoed and I'm floundering in the ocean, I don't care a bit about my jewelry. And I'm not going that way, we have to find a different passage. And sure enough, the ship we had hit and was torpedoed, fortunately without us. And we decided to go the other way from Stockholm through Russia and Japan to Seattle, to Vancouver and Seattle, and from Seattle to New York. And it's quite a long trip. And we flew in August 1940 from Stockholm to Moscow, and we had people in Stockholm paid in Swedish money for the whole trip through Russia, including transportation to and from the airport, tips, etc., etc. And we got coupons, but we could only stay in one special hotel in Moscow. And we were brought there, and it was a rickety old, very old hotel. But was clean and good enough. And you couldn't lock the bathroom door or any other door, so I always had a little bit of string with me to tie the door closed. We got good food. We got we took a ride on the street in Moscow, which is very clean and very beautiful, all in order. We saw a very famous exhibition of agriculture showing all the products of Russia, from fur to coffee to grain to everything. And they had very large monuments of Lenin and Stalin in flowers about 20 feet high all over the places. And we saw the body of Stalin under glass in the Kremlin. People from all over Russia and other countries came and stood in line for hours just to pass by and see him. And we were on the subway in Moscow, and it's very difficult to get out at the right stop if you can't read one single letter. We counted, and nobody at that time in Russia was allowed to speak English or German or anything but Russian, with exception of the guides of the interest bureau, who spoke very well. But we were alone on the subway, but counted steps and got out and back all right and had a nice time. And had good food. We saw people stand in line for buying tickets to the ballet, for buying tickets to the opera, and for buying things in department stores. And people were dressed without any makeup. And they stared at us because Max wore a tie, and they were very simply dressed, no tie, just a short shirt or something. And so we were 3 or 4 quite interesting days in August in Moscow. And then the Siberian Railroad from Moscow, which took 11 days. And I saw Europeans with us, and the rest were Russians. And we traveled third class because we had to count our money very carefully. But inside, of course, had a private little compartment just for the two of us. And we traveled with an older couple from Germany who traveled first class, and to their horror found himself share a room with a Russian soldier and with a Russian woman. But the food was good, and we had a guy from Interest Bureau who was supposed to stay with us, and all of which had been paid before. And on the second day out, we stopped at a larger city, and he said anybody who has letters to mail should give them to me and the money for postage, and I will do it. And he took the money and the mail, and he disappeared, and he was never seen again. So we were in the middle of Siberia without anybody speaking our language, or any of us speaking any Russian. Next morning at breakfast, they gave us a menu in the dining room. I don't know a word of Russian, I just pointed hopefully that I would get some nice breakfast. And what did I get at 10 in the morning? And tea you could get all the time without any effort, and I think some such things also. And there was from 8 in the morning to 10 or 11 at night, packed in every compartment of the train. When Russian spoke Russian to you, which can drive you up the wall if you don't understand the word. But we made the best of it, and some evenings we had some music, and we were even dancing in the aisles. And the 30th of August was our wedding anniversary, and a Swedish lady who was traveling with us had found out and surprised us very much in the middle of Siberia with a very lovely ice wedding cake, layer cake. And the dance has had a really nice time. Then we got to Vladivostok and stayed there for two nights, and then went by ship to Japan, and there we shared our room on the ship with three or four strangers, and got to a little place in Japan where we had 2 hours between the ship and the train, and walked down the village street to have a cup of coffee or something. And it seems that the villagers had never seen white people, and they came out of their houses and stared at us as though we had six heads or something, and were laughing their heads off, and we weren't very happy. And then we got to a restaurant, and they said they couldn't serve us anything before 5 and nothing before. So we finally went and got to the train, and up our train to Tokyo, and Tokyo was very, very hot and humid, and since we had lived in Sweden, we were not used to humidity. The tile floors in the hotel were constantly wet just from the humidity. And I saw my first very large cockroaches, which didn't endear Tokyo to my heart at all. And they gave you a kimono in your hotel room, and they gave you slippers, and you had a nice bathtub. And we got good food, but the Japanese were at that time allied with the German Nazis, and I didn't like it at all in Tokyo, and said to Max, let's get the first ship out of here. I didn't understand. So we booked passage from Yokohama to Seattle on a ship, Hikawa Maru, which was the creakiest, oldest ship you can imagine. And we hit a typhoon. I was convinced it would fall apart, but it didn't. We shared our cabin with six other people, one old lady with her 45-year-old sons, one couple from Hamburg with a very pretty 16-year-old daughter, and very close quarters, very bad food. They usually first spoke the Japanese, then they locked the dining room, put the breakfast with eggs and everything on the plate for everybody, and locked the door, and kept us waiting 10-15 minutes. So then when we finally got into the dining room, of course the eggs were cold, and the coffee was cold, and everything was pretty bad. And there were no deck chairs. We chest out on the floor or whatever. And it was one, we had one big typhoon, and we sat at long tables, and there were, they had very beautiful fruit, something, a mixture between an apple and a pear, and that was put in front of every table and of every place. And the ship was shaking so much that all the apples of maybe 20 or so from the whole long table fell onto my plate. And the tears were rolling all over the place, but we didn't get seasick. And one night everybody was seasick in our cabin, and we knew it was contagious, so we stayed upstairs on deck the whole night and slept there just in a blanket. And also, even though we traveled third class, we could sit or lie on first class deck. There were some Englishmen who very conscientiously every day walked a mile or 2 miles, and it said so often around the deck is 1 mile. And my husband got a little, not seasick, but not far from it, and we were told if you lie flat on your stomach and breathe deeply and make sure to eat before, then you wouldn't get seasick. So he was lying out in the deck and breathing deeply and fighting seasickness successfully. And those Englishmen couldn't deviate from their tour, because otherwise a mile wouldn't be a mile. So they, every time they came by, had to step over him. But it didn't bother him, and I brought him some food up until finally we got to Vancouver, and then from Vancouver to Seattle. And we spent one day in Seattle, and there I saw, we were greeted by the Council of Jewish Women, who gave us hot chocolate and Hershey Kisses, which I had never seen, though that was my introduction to Hershey Kisses. And I also saw the first black people dressed in street clothes. I had only in my hometown seen them in the circus, and up for display, but never dressed like you and me. And so I, of course, stared. And we saw a little bit of Seattle, and then took the train from Seattle to New York, which took about 4 days. So our whole trip from Stockholm to New York took 5 weeks, but since we were young and healthy, and the weather was good, as we arrived in September in New York, we had sort of enjoyed the adventure of the trip and seen a lot. We had been in Siberia and seen that it's not all cold and ice and snow as we thought, but the south of it is very fertile agricultural land with corn and all kinds, even coffee cane, and very beautiful and very hot. And then Spiro Pichan, that's the Jewish settlement, there still today, the street signs, or at least in 1940, the street signs were in Hebrew and Russian, and a whole Russian congregation lives comfortably and not bothered by any thing. So that was an interesting trip, and we got to, when we were on the train from Seattle to New York, and we had decided to save money and not take sleeping cars, so we sat up at night. It was three or four nights, and since I'm short, I usually found the seat next to me empty. I could curl up and sleep quite nicely. And in the dining room saw my first big, ate my first big potato, which I had never known before, and was impressed by the black waiters and the white jackets, very good looking and very efficient. Then we got to New York and found jobs. And I took care of a child rather badly because I had no experience whatsoever. And Max found a job in a factory making dental supply and instruments. And I hope I never go to a dentist who uses whatever instruments he made, because he knew absolutely nothing about it, and started with $10 a week and then worked himself up to $12 and then to $14 a week. And after 1 week of $14, the boss said he really can't afford such a high salary, and it's back down to $12. And that annoyed him enough to quit his job and Tao to get back into his export business. And he had a connection with Mr. Winkler. So he went there and he suggested that he would build up some export in textiles and things. Mr. Winkler had a lumber firm and work on commission, and I think $10 or $11 salary a week, which he did. And at home every night he wrote to all the people he could think of all over the world, and finally he really got business to do and did very well, and built it from $10 a week up to nearly $1,000 a week. I found a job in a factory sewing kits for the military at that time. This was when America was at war in at the Pearl Harbor, and we were still on German passports, which made us enemy aliens. So we couldn't have a camera and we were fingerprinted. And my sewing for the army was a tool that I sometimes bought. That they would think that I'm trying to sabotage the war effort. But Nazi business got very much better, and I was expecting Lillian, so I retired from my job, and we moved into a very lovely apartment in September 14, 1942. Lillian was born, and we did very well financially. And had a pretty good apartment. I had a nurse and I had help. And Lillian was a little baby. She was a little over 6 pounds and never ate anything, but she did all right anyway. And then in September 45, Leslie was born. He was 7 pounds and was a very good eater. And when he was 14 months, on December 10th, 1946, Rainy was born, and then the apartment in Manhattan had become too small, and we bought the house in Scarsdale and moved in April 1947 with the 3 children into Scarsdale, and found a sleep-in help, and did very well. And children grew up and can tell you the rest of the story, how they grew up and went to school in Scarsdale and then went to college, got married, had you. And in 55 my husband died, and children were still young, and I devoted next 12 or 14 years to bring them up. And the better or worse, they will tell you that too. And they were a great help to me. And in 68 I remarried, December 23rd. I married a year older. And we had been widowed, and I had a daughter of 16 who lived with us because my children by then had left for college and married. And then in due time she got married and had a little girl. And at least he now is my husband and children and grandchildren. And I wish all of you a very happy new year. And I hope you enjoy listening to this too. I would like to add a little postscript. There were a few mistakes in the report, which I heard when I played it back, and which will only show that even a grandmother can make mistakes. The first one was my mother's first name was misspelled. It should be F-R-I-E-D-A. The second one was figuring. From 13 years to 18 is 5 years, as I'm sure you figured out by yourself. And then I said we saw the body of Stalin, but Stalin was very much alive at that time. We saw the body of Lenin in Moscow. And Leslie was 15 months when Prabhu was born. And so you should lie on your back when the full nurses is not on your stomach, as I said. And to show settlement in Guru Bhutan, I said Russian congregation, but I meant it should be a Jewish congregation. Now again, it was a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm signing off. I wish all of you the very best. Thank you.